off my clock.
Blog Talk Radio.
Puppies, quiet puppies. We'll feed you some of the other guests later on. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm JLK from Spook Show. And I'm here with...
Hey, Baker, from the Weirdness, really bad movie. That really isn't a dog in the background. Dale recorded me stubbing my toe the other day, and he used that instead. Thanks, Dale.
Yes. You should have heard him.
Well, thank you for editing out those. Thank you for editing out those extra words I said in between.
Wow, this is a family show, you know. And depending on your family, we've got great entertainment. We're still gone to the dogs here this weekend with the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. And a little visit from Red Skelton, plus Dog Facts, Dave Facts. You're in for fun tonight.
Yeah, we are. I love this adaptation of... of course, this is my favorite of all... I love Holmes, Sherlock Holmes stories, and this is my favorite of all Sherlock Holmes stories, and this is written after he killed off Sherlock Holmes. That's why you'll find it in the memoirs of Sherlock Holmes, before he brought him back to life. He did write several stories about remembering their times together. That's where this particular tale comes from. There are a lot of people who don't care for Sherlock Holmes stories. I kind of found that out when I was looking at the Radio Mystery Theater page and seeing people comment on that. Some people just really didn't like this adaptation. One guy thought it should have been like a 5-night event. It was, of course, based on a novel. But I thought they did an admirable job here. I really did. It's one of my favorite home stories. I don't think I've really seen, there's a couple versions I haven't watched on purpose, but I don't think I've seen any version that I haven't liked. I shared that one with you. I don't know whether you got to see Oliver yet, Dale. I thought that was interesting. Of course, the one from 39 with Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce, that was wonderful. And, of all the radio adaptions I've heard so far, this is by far my favorite.
I have to say I'm partial to Basil. Oh, I love me some Basil Rathbone. And yeah, I know that the Nigel Bruce character isn't exactly how Dr. Watson was intended to be, but I love the bumbling. I love the relationship between those two characters in the Universal films, including the 1939 version of Hound of the Baskervilles, which was the first with Basil right. and Nigel. What a great year 1939 was. We talked about that.
Basil.
How many great movies came out. But
Basil. Sorry, not here. I have to say it.
Year, as we know, Jack Benny did the spoof that we listened to last night. And tonight we have the CBS Radio Mystery Theater version that Dave is very fond of.
Listening to that Jack Benny piece last night, I think whoever wrote that thing had never read the story of Hounds of Baskervilles. I think they took a popular topic.
We'll find out tonight.
Yeah. But it was certainly a lot of fun, and we've got some fun tonight in a lot of ways, including this great CBS Radio Mystery Theater episode. Now, this one guy, let me put a little bit here. He rates it as a 4 out of 5 stars for good and gives props to Murray Burnett for his writing the many adaptions of Holmes. Since the story was based on a novel, he said he would like to have seen this expanded into 5 parts like they did with Nefertiti, The Last Days of Pompeii, and The Legend of Alexander and The Les Miserables. If you had the main characters, of course, not every character, such as they are, of course, I had Kevin McCarthy, Sherlock Holmes. They have Lloyd Batiste as Dr. Watson. I really like that portrayal. Carol Tytel is also in there, playing a couple roles. Robert Dryden is in there. Court Benson is in there. There's just so many great actors. I have something I picked up off the web from our friend Joe Bev, and something that he wrote about the Mystery Theater. And I can share that at any particular point we want to share that, but it's a little interesting about his brush with trying to get on the CBS Radio Mystery Theater himself. So let me get to that.
We definitely need to share that with the audience tonight. I think you'll find it interesting.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. I was just building a bridge.
Better to build them than to burn them, my friend.
That's right.
No, this is a wonderful story. And I like the portrayal of Watson in this. I like that Kevin McCarthy is Holmes. Giving his Canadian accent without getting all the donuts in there, and just a wonderful, as all mystery theaters are, even when the stories are weak, they're acted tremendously.
Yeah, and Kevin McCarthy fans will know that he was, of course, in that great science fiction classic, Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
He became a favorite of... Yes, I do enjoy it. And the funny thing is, I looked up to see what else he did, and the only other radio he did out of Mystery Theater, the Mystery Theater, which he did quite a bit of, he did two suspenses, one in 59 and one in 60. And we'll have to work to bring those here at some point. But I did listen to one of my, I didn't get through the other one yet, but I did listen to one of them. I thought that, just great. I just always loved his delivery, his voice, his presence that he brings to something.
And we'll enjoy part one of this one then. Dave, do we have a original broadcast date for this episode of CBS Radio?
We do. This is episode number 609 from March 1st, 1977.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. I remember when I was in high school, I studied a poem which struck terror to my heart. I still recall the opening lines, which went, I fled him down the nights and down the days. I fled him down the arches of the years. I fled him down the labyrinthine ways of my own mind. Some of you will recognize the author as Francis Thompson and the poem as The Hound of Heaven. And it's still terrifying. But think how much more fearful it would be if the hound you were fleeing from was a hound of hell.
Good Lord! What's that?
I don't know, Sir Henry. Some sound they have on the moor, I think.
Don't coddle me, Watson. When the people of the moor hear that cry, what do they say it is?
They say it's the cry of the hound of the Baskervilles, seeking its prey. Our mystery drama, The Hound of the Baskervilles, was especially adapted from the Sherlock Holmes classic For the Mystery Theater by Murray Burnett and stars Kevin McCarthy. It is sponsored in part by General Electric Citizen Band Radios
and Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
The mantle of immortality is elusive and unpredictable. two fictional characters created at the turn of the century by Arthur Conan Doyle have become undying legends. So strong is the public belief in their existence that the City of London recently granted the owner of the premises at 221B Baker Street the right to change the number of that address permanently in order to avoid the hordes of tourists flocking to see the actual living quarters of Sherlock Holmes and his colleague, Dr. Watson. Our story today starts in those very rooms in the year 1902. My training as a medical man made me an early riser. Sherlock Holmes wasn't. On this morning, my friend was at the breakfast table while I was intently examining a cane that had been left behind by a visitor who had missed us last night.
Well, Watson, what do you make of it? You've been looking at the cane for some time. Since we've been so unfortunate as to miss the owner and have no notion of his errand, this accidental souvenir carries some importance. Let me hear you construct the man by an examination of it.
Well, very well, Holmes. Really, it's child's play to read that the man's name is James Mortimer, that he's a physician. But I would go further and say he's an elderly country practitioner who does a great deal of his visiting on foot because the end of this stick is very heavily worn down.
Excellent, Watson.
Now, the stick was given to him by the Friends of the CCH, which I take to be the Something Hunt, a local group to whom he's possibly given some assistance. Now, has anything escaped me?
Now, here, let me have a look at it, Watson.
Well, I trust there's nothing of importance I've overlooked.
No, Watson. This man is certainly a country practitioner who walks a great deal.
Then I was right.
To that extent. But since we know that the man is a doctor, is it likely that presentation to him would come from a hospital rather than a hunt? And when we see the initials CCH, does not Charing Cross Hospital leap to the mind? Can we not also infer that such a presentation would be made at the time he left? Perhaps to practice in the country. And since the date is on the stick, and it's only 5 years ago, it's highly unlikely that an elderly, well-established physician would go into country practice. So, we now have a young fellow, amiable, unambitious, and possessor of a favorite dog, which I should say is larger than a terrier and smaller than a mastiff.
Come on. Well, the dog is too much.
Not at all. If you'll observe these tooth marks in the middle of the stick, where the dog has been accustomed to carry it. The dog's jaw is too broad for a terrier and not quite broad enough for a mastiff. It may well be... It is. A curly-haired spaniel.
My dear Holmes, how can you possibly be so sure of that?
The very simple reason that I see the dog itself on our doorstep. And... there is the ring of its owner, and we shall soon discover why he has come to see us.
The appearance of our visitor was a surprise to me because although Holmes had correctly deduced his age, his back was already bowed, and he walked with a forward thrust of his head. As he entered, his eyes fell upon the stick in Holmes's hand, and he ran to it with an exclamation of joy.
Ah, I'm so very glad. I wouldn't want to lose that stick for the world.
Presentation, I see.
Yes, indeed.
From Charing Cross Hospital?
From some friends there on the occasion of my marriage.
Ah, dear, that's bad.
I beg your pardon? Why was that bad?
Well, only that you've disarranged our little deductions. We had surmised that you left the hospital.
Oh, and so I did. Immediately upon my marriage.
Ah.
It was necessary to make a home for my wife.
Well, we weren't so far wrong after all. But now, Dr. Mortimer, I think it wise if you will tell me what the exact nature of the problem is in which you ask my assistance.
And then, to my astonishment, the physician took a worn and ancient manuscript from his pocket and read to us a most horrifying tale concerning the manor of Baskerville, located in Devonshire, and the origin of a curse on the Baskerville line. The manuscript told of the abduction of a young girl on Michaelmas Eve and locking her up in Baskerville Hall. The girl, being both courageous and ingenious, dared to escape from an upper floor by clambering down the ivy and then setting off across the moors towards her home.
Upon discovering that the maiden had indeed escaped, Hugo Baskerville became as one possessed, and he cried aloud before his companions that that very night he would render his body and soul to the powers of evil if he might overtake the girl with the hounds he would set upon her.
Excuse the interruption, Doctor, but you're certain of the authenticity of this document?
Oh, absolutely, Mr. Holmes. It's in the form of a letter from the third Hugo Baskerville to his sons, explaining why they should fear going out on the moors at night.
I see. I presume that manuscript gives a reason.
No, it most certainly does. The hound of the Baskervilles. If you let me continue. Hugo's companions, riding after him across the moors, came upon a night shepherd, a man so crazed with fear that he could scarce speak. He told the riders that he'd not only seen the maid running for her very life, but also Sir Hugo on his black mare and running mute behind him, such a hound of hell as God forbid should ever be at my heels. Well, I come to the close, Mr. Holmes. It says here that three riders came upon the body of the maid, dead from fatigue and fear, and also the body of Sir Hugo Baskerville, with a great black beast, larger than any mortal hound, ravening at Sir Hugo's throat with its jaw dripping blood. Well, such is the tale, my sons, of the coming of the hound, which is said to have plagued the Baskerville family so sorely ever since. Well, Mr. Holmes, don't you find it interesting?
Only to a collector of fairy tales.
Well, then how would you classify this newspaper account in the Devon County Chronicle of 3 weeks ago?
3 weeks ago. Regrettable death of Charles Baskerville. Body found at Fainview Alley of Baskerville Hall. Pronounced dead by his friend and physician, James Mortimer. That's you. Coroner's verdict, cardiac exhaustion. Despite some strange aspects of the death... Well, now, Dr. Mortimer, everything seems straightforward, but evidently you entertain some doubts in the matter. Something you didn't state to the press or at the inquest?
Yes, Mr. Holmes. When I first saw the body, Sir Charles lay upon his face, his arms out, fingers dug deep into the ground, and his features convulsed into such a grimace of terror that I, his best friend and physician, hardly recognized him.
Dear me. No physical injuries?
None. But although Harrison, the caretaker who found the body, said he saw no traces at all upon the ground, I did, Mr. Holmes, I did.
Footprints?
Footprints.
A man's or a woman's?
Neither. They were the tracks of a gigantic hound.
And your reason for withholding this information at the inquest?
Because the people of the countryside do not share your opinion about the curse hanging over the Baskerville family. Sir Charles himself believed in it, and I certainly had no wish to add fuel to the flames. Besides...
Yes?
Well, there's a realm in which the most acute and most experienced of detectives is helpless.
You mean the supernatural? Well, I confine my investigations to this world, and I cannot understand why you are now consulting me.
But I came to ask your advice about what I should do with the heir, the new Sir Henry Baskerville, who arrives in Waterloo Station in exactly 1 hour.
Meet him, take him to a good hotel, and both of you come back here tomorrow at noon.
Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, this is Sir Henry Baskerville.
How do you do? I'm all at sea. I have been ever since I got the news of my uncle's death and my inheritance. I had no idea Uncle Charles was so well fixed.
Dr. Mortimer, as the executor of the state, can you tell us, are there any other claimants?
No, sir. And then this morning, I find this note at my hotel, and one of my brand new boots is missing.
May I see the note?
Of course. Dime novel stuff, if you ask me.
As you value your life or reason, keep away from the moor. Oh, we must all agree there's nothing supernatural about this. Now, the missing boots?
A brand new pair. I bought them just yesterday. Left them outside my hotel door to be polished, and one of them's gone this morning. I can only tell you that there's no devil in hell and no man upon earth who can prevent me from going to the home of my own people.
And so it was arranged that on Saturday I was to accompany Sir Henry and take up residence with him at Baskerville Hall, because Holmes was insistent that someone be with Sir Henry at all times. When Holmes and I called to pick up Sir Henry at his hotel Saturday, we found the young baronet in a rage.
I won't be played for a sucker in this hotel.
You still haven't located your boots, Sir Henry?
But this is a different one.
What?
I got the other one back, and now I'm missing an old black one. I'm beginning to think this hotel is nothing but a den of thieves.
I think it's very odd and damnably dangerous.
Mr. Holmes, if you know something, you should inform us so that we may...
Dr. Mortimer, I know only that you were concerned about the safety of Sir Henry. And quite rightly so. I also know that someone knew that you were in this hotel and saw fit to warn you to keep away from Baskerville Hall and the moor. Now, we all know that there were extremely suspicious circumstances surrounding the death of Sir Charles Baskerville. I therefore suggest that anything out of the ordinary, such as the curious incidents with the boots, must be taken very seriously.
Well, surely you must be joking about the boots, Holmes. I fail to...
My dear Watson, did you bring your revolver, as I asked?
Well, of course.
Good. Carry it at all times.
Well, I confess, your instructions are making me nervous.
They should have precisely the opposite effect. Now, Dr. Mortimer, as executor of Sir Charles' will, you know the exact amount of the estate. Is it considerable?
Well, I should say that a sum in excess of £740,000 is indeed considerable.
Dear me, dear me. That is a stake for which a man might well play a desperate game. In the event something happens to Sir Henry, who stands to inherit?
Even a distant cousin named James Desmond. And if you have any suspicions in that direction, let me inform you he's a clergyman in his 70s.
Mm. Thank you. Now, Watson, I want complete and daily reports from you. When the crisis arises, as it surely will, I will direct you how to act. Now, gentlemen, goodbye and Godspeed.
Ever since I was old enough to read, I have delighted in the adventures of Sherlock Holmes and his bumbling but lovable colleague, Dr. Watson. The game is afoot, and we'll be back shortly with Act Two.
Yes, Act Two coming your way. That's a great start. And yeah, Dave, I have to say, this is infectious.
I agree with E.G. Marshall. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, as much as I like Basil, this version is growing on me very rapidly.
Yeah, I really love the movie version. Don't get me wrong. I love what they did with that as well, and with Basil Rathbone and all. But it's as far as the radio version, this is very enjoyable. Yeah, and I agree with E.G. Marshall. I've always had trouble reading and enjoying reading, but I've always been able to enjoy the good Sherlock Holmes story, even when I had to struggle through and read it. I was able to do that, so that does resonate with what E.G. Marshall said, even though somebody else wrote it for him. What I have is what next is what somebody else did not write for him. I have the first set of Dog Facts, Dave Facts. So
wait,
here we go.
We've got to have a good intro for this, Dave.
I'm afraid. There we go. All right. And this is the first of four sets of four for 16 tonight. The extra bonus Dog Fact Dave Facts. First Dog Fact Dave Facts. In Iran, it is against the law to own a dog as a pet. However, if an owner can prove the dog is a guard or hunting dog, this restriction does not apply. Dave Fact, what is less known is that dogs can own people in Iran. Dog Fact, all dogs can be traced back 40 million years to a weasel-like animal called
Miasis, which dwelled in trees and dens. Stay fact, enough research will also show this is the origin of mothers-in-law. Dog fact, dogs have three eyelids. The third eyelid, called the nictitating membrane or haw, keeps the eye lubricated and protected. Dog fact, I think I saw this once on an episode of Twilight Zone. Dog fact, the name of the dog on the Cracker Jacks box is Bingo. Dave fact, don't worry, I won't tell you what the first surprise prize was. That is the first set of dog facts, Dave facts. Yeah, I slipped that one up.
There we go. What was the name of the dog on, what was the name of Buster Brown's dog?
Ty? Buster Brown lives in, here's the dog Ty, he lives in there too?
T-I-G-H-E.
Yes, I think it was. Yes, there it is, yep, you got it right, T-I-G-H-E, I think that's right, yep. And I remember the song too. And I'll do everybody a favor by not singing it.
And of course, we all love Snoopy. But the dog we got tonight is a little scarier. This howling beast that Sherlock Holmes is investigating tonight.
Absolutely. I got to thinking about some things we talked about last night. I think the longest serving dog on at least in television would have been Lassie. Ran for many years, which seemed kind of hokey to me till I started watching a few old episodes and said, "Doggone it, sucks me right in, no fair," you know.
I almost thought Buck Bundy would have gave it a run, but then I remembered that Buck retired, the dog that played Buck Bundy, the dog on Married with Children. And they got some Cocker Spaniel or something to take his place, named Lucky.
Well, Lassie was one of, like, what, four or five dogs in its run.
Yeah.
Lassie wasn't just Lassie. I mean, one of the Lassies was even a Laddie, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Television's first transvestite, Lassie.
And it's funny, he just didn't look it.
Played it so well.
I did think his bark was a little lower though than the other one.
I wonder if there are anybody keeps records at the American Kennel Club of if there was like a huge spike in people getting collies after Lassie came out, because that was so popular, you know.
Well, I'm sure it was because, you know, whenever another version of 101 Dalmatians comes out, there's always another big spike in Dalmatians being picked up. So, yeah, people have to get with what's popular, I guess. But you're right. I'm sure Lassie led to a lot of collies. And collie is such a beautiful animal. It really is.
They are, but they it's a lot of fur to comb and maintain.
Yeah, and from what I've known from some friends that have, they don't have as long a life as many dogs do.
That's a shame. It's a shame.
Really? 'Cause
they are beautiful dogs, and we've got beauties and beasts, and we'll get back to the beast here with the Hound of the Baskervilles from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Here's part two.
One of our most successful writers of modern detective stories once made a terrible pun, but a perceptive comment on Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's stories about Sherlock Holmes. It went this way. Be they ever so humble, there's no police like Holmes. I agree wholeheartedly. And now we have the pleasure of rejoining Dr. Watson, Sir Henry Baskerville, and Dr. James Mortimer in the wagonette, carrying them and their luggage across the moors on the way to Baskerville Hall.
Look at that, Sir Henry and Watson. I believe it's a mounted soldier with a rifle. Pull up, driver. Pull up.
Not to worry, sir. He's on the watch for a convict that escaped from Princeton. The farmers here don't like him. He's a man that will stop by nothing. It's Selden, the Nothing Hill murderer.
I gave an involuntary shudder. It was a case Holmes had taken an interest in because of the ferocity of a man, Selden, who escaped the death penalty only because his atrocious conduct had led to doubts about his sanity. As I shivered, the wagon swept onto a long driveway where stood a huge building with mullioned windows. Standing in front of the large, heavy door was an angular woman with deep-set eyes which blazed with fanatic fire.
Welcome to Baskerville Hall, Sir Henry. I'm Mrs. Harrison, the caretaker's wife. My husband will be here shortly. He joins with me in wishing you a long, happy life and in begging you to avoid the moor, particularly in those hours of darkness when the powers of evil are exalted.
The very next morning, I set out to explore the moor by daylight. As I walked along a gray and lonely road, wishing that Holmes were here to help me, my thoughts were interrupted by a man calling my name.
Dr. Watson! Dr. Watson!
Yes, sir?
I'm Stapleton. I just live down the moor at Merripit House. Most of the folks around here call me an eccentric because of my hobby. I'm a naturalist.
I can see that from your net and box. But how do you know me?
Oh, no mystery about that. You passed Dr. Mortimer's house a short way back. He pointed you out to me as you passed. As our road lay the same way, I thought I'd overtake you and introduce myself. How is Sir Henry? None the worse for his journey, I trust?
Well, he's very well, thank you.
Not afraid of living down here after the sad death of Sir Charles?
That is of some concern to you, sir.
Well, it means a great deal to the countryside to have a wealthy man such as Sir Henry with us. Well, I'm glad to hear he has no superstitious fears of the fiend dog, which is supposed to haunt the family.
I don't believe he has. How do you stand on the matter?
I'm a scientist. But it's extraordinary how credulous the farmers are. Any number of them are ready to swear they've seen such a creature on the moor.
And you have?
Of course not. Although I have no doubt the story led to Sir Charles's tragic end.
Indeed. Why do you think that?
Well, Sir Charles had a vivid imagination and a diseased heart. His nerves were so on edge that the appearance of any dog at all at night near the yew alley might well have triggered a fatal heart attack. You agree?
Well, I've come to no conclusion.
Quite so. Well, if you care to come along with me to Merripit House, I'll introduce you to my sister.
Well, that's very kind of you.
Tell me what you think of the moor.
Well, this morning's my first venture on it. But that large plain to the north looks like a fine place for a gallop on a horse.
That thought has already cost several lives, Dr. Watson.
What? That seems hard to believe.
You see those bright green spots scattered thickly over it?
Yes. Yes, they seem more fertile than the rest.
Well, you might say that. But in reality, that's the great Grimpen Mire. One false step for man or beast, and you die slowly and agonizingly in the quicksand. An awful place, Doctor. And yet, I find my way to the very heart of it safely.
Why would you want to go to such a place?
That's where the rarest plants and butterflies are. And I have the wit to reach them.
Good Lord, what was that?
The natives say it's the hound of the Baskervilles calling for its prey.
Well, you don't believe that, do you?
Perhaps it's the mud settling in the bog. Well, excuse me, but unless I'm mistaken, there's a purple hair streak. Ha! Very rare. I'll join you at Merripit House. You can't miss it.
Stapleton was off with amazing speed and agility. To my dismay, the creature fluttered straight for the great mire. But Stapleton never paused for a moment. I stood watching him and then turned to find a woman near me upon the path. Slim, elegant, with a sensitive mouth and dark, eager eyes.
Go back. Go straight back to London. Instantly. Instantly.
What? Why? I mean, why should I go back?
I cannot explain, but do what I ask. Go back and never set foot on this moor again.
But I have just only come.
Can't you tell when a warning is for your own good? Get away from this place immediately.
But, ma'am, I...
Don't say a word.
Hello, Belle.
Well, Jack, you're very warm and out of breath, I see. But what was it this time?
Purple hair streak. Seldom found in the late autumn. Pity I missed him, Ma. You've introduced yourselves, I see.
Yes, I was telling Sir Henry that it was rather late for him to see the true beauties of the moor.
You think he's Sir Henry Baskerville?
Of course.
Oh, no, ma'am. I'm only a humble commoner. My name is Dr. Watson.
Oh, we've been talking at cross purposes.
Well, you've not had very much time for talk.
Well, I merely mean that I talked as if Dr. Watson were a resident instead of a visitor.
I chose this out-of-the-way spot to settle down in, Doctor, because it offers an unlimited field of work in the areas of botany and zoology. Dr. Mortimer is a learned man, and Sir Charles was also an admirable companion. We knew him well, missed him. Of course, we miss our boys, too, don't we, Beryl?
Most certainly.
Your boys?
Yes, I had a school in the North Country. However, serious epidemic broke out and three of the boys died. School never recovered from the blow.
Well, I feel I should be getting back to the hall.
Well, as you wish. Do you think we'd be intruding if Beryl and I were to call this afternoon and make the acquaintance of Sir Henry?
I'm sure Sir Henry would be delighted. I set off rapidly upon the same path by which we'd come. But there must have been some shortcut, because before I reached the road, I was astounded to see Miss Stapleton sitting upon a rock by the side of the track.
I've run all the way in order to cut you off, Dr. Watson, and to tell you to forget what I said. I must not stop, or my brother will miss me.
Now, hold on a moment, please. Sir Henry's welfare is a close concern of mine. Why were you so eager he should leave here?
Well, my brother and I were very much shocked by the death of Sir Charles. We all know the story of the hound, and I felt he should be warned.
But the hound's story is nonsense.
No, I happen to believe it. Now, I must go back.
No, just one more question. Why did you not wish your brother to know about the warning?
My brother's most anxious to have the hall inhabited. He thinks it is for the good of the people here. He'd have been angry if he knew I'd urged Sir Henry to leave.
My dear Holmes, I am writing to report that I have solved one riddle, only unfortunately to come up with another. You may recall my mentioning to you that I believed I heard a woman sobbing during the first night I spent at Baskerville Hall. I mentioned this to Sir Henry, and we agreed that if I heard anything this night, I should wake him and we would investigate together. Along about 2 o'clock in the morning, I heard stealthy footsteps going past my door. I was out of bed in a flash and waited until they'd passed. I went to Sir Henry's room and tapped softly our prearranged signal.
Yes? You heard something, Watson?
Footsteps. Those sobbing? No. The footsteps passed my door and went down the corridor. I see that it turns left. Where does it end?
At a window overlooking the moors.
And the steps went in that direction. Oh. Softly now.
What? Why, it's Mrs. Harrison. What in the world is she doing?
She's holding a candle against the window and peering out. Her face is pressed almost against the glass.
And crying bitterly. Come on, Watson. We'll get to the bottom of this. All right, Mrs. Harrison. Tell us what you're doing up here.
Oh, Sir Henry, I was just going round to see that the windows were fastened.
On the second floor?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I check all the windows at night.
And that makes you cry?
Well, I was doing no harm, sir. I was just holding a candle to the window.
She must have been signaling someone.
Oh, no, sir.
There.
There it is, Sir Henry. An answering signal from the moor.
No, sir. It's nothing. It's nothing at all.
Move that candle across the window, Watson. That's it. There. Mrs. Harrison. You see, the other light moves also. Now, speak up. What is the meaning of all this?
Oh, please believe me, Sir Henry. It has nothing to do with you. It's a personal matter.
So you say. I know your family has been employed by mine for more than 50 years, but I'm not in Baskerville Hall a week before I find you deep in some dark plot against me.
Oh, no, sir. No, sir. Not against you. Not you. You see, sir, my unhappy brother is starving on the moor. I cannot let him perish on my very doorstep. This light is a signal that food is ready for him, and his light is to show me and my husband the spot to which to bring it.
Good Lord. Then your brother is...
Yes. The escaped convict. Selden. The evil Nottingham murderer. He is my brother.
We took the weeping unfortunate woman to her husband and left her. Sir Henry insisted on accompanying me on the moor to assist me in capturing this dangerous criminal. I had my revolver and Sir Henry a hunting crop. The moor was pitch black, but we easily picked out the pinpoint of light where the fellow was waiting. Mind the footing, Sir Henry.
Yes, sir.
A pity we can't show a light.
I think we should bear more to the right. There's his light.
Watson! What's that?
I don't know. A sound they have on the moor. I heard it once before.
Don't toddle me, Watson. That was the cry of a hound.
They say it's the cry of the Hound of the Baskervilles.
Do you believe that, Watson?
No, but I think that we should forget our expedition.
No, by thunder, whatever that cry was, it came from far away, near the mire. We must continue and get that convict.
I don't think that's wise. I urge you to return to the hall.
You don't believe in this hellhound, and neither do I. Come on, man.
Well, I'm charged with your safety. Holmes would never forgive me if something happened to you while you were in
my care. While we stand here jawing, our man will get away. Now, come on.
No, I cannot allow it.
You can't prevent it.
Well, either you come back to the hall with me now, willingly, or I shall be forced to knock you down and carry you back. Now, which shall it be?
Each of us carries within us the seeds of our own destruction. It would appear that Sir Henry Baskerville was no different. His pride was driving him to disregard the advice of those who were there to protect him. We'll be back with Act Three and his decision in just a little while.
As we are now two-thirds of the way through with Hound of the Baskerville.
Knock him down, Watson. Knock him down.
Yes, indeed. And after this set, yep. And after this next set, we'll be halfway through our sets of Dog Facts, Dave Facts. When I pull up the right paper, here it is. Here we go. Dog Fact. One female dog and her female children could produce 4,372 puppies in 7 years. Dave fact. Somebody stop that dog. Dog fact. Dogs can smell about 1,000 to 10,000 times better than humans. Dave fact. I prefer the smell of a woman wearing Obsession. Dog fact. Male dogs will raise their legs while urinating to aim higher on trees or lampposts because they want to leave a message that they are tall and intimidating. Dave fact. I did this a lot in college, the days after a night drinking. Dog fact. In Ventura County, California, dogs and cats are not allowed to have sex without a permit. Dave fact. Where would you go to buy that permit and why? That's dog fact. There we go. That was a scary one. I, you know, I mean, that's a law. That's just weird. You have to have a permit for your dog, and you have to have sex. Okay. Okay.
You don't call that a marriage license.
Oh, they do everything different in California. That's right. Here we go. Okay, folks, two more of those to sit through, but we're okay. We're moving along here. Got a great tale going with E.G. Marshall and Kevin McCarthy and a wonderful adaptation of Hound of the Baskervilles on the CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
People have varying thresholds of fear. For example, I have no particular fear of heights, but a friend of mine hugs the wall if he finds himself on a terrace more than three floors up. As for me, I shudder at the thought of being hunted down by a pack of dogs, whereas an experienced woodsman might not find that so terrifying. However, I think even an experienced hunter might well find the baying of a fiend dog, a hound from hell, a soul-shattering experience.
There it is again, Sir Henry. I don't know what it is, but you're walking back to the safety of the hall with me, or I shall knock you down and kill you.
And allow this murderous convict to escape.
And that, my dear Holmes, you must acknowledge, solves one mystery. The other, I frankly don't understand. It seems Sir Henry is much taken with Beryl Stapleton, who is indeed handsome. She talks of nothing but his leaving Baskerville Hall, and he suspects her brother, Stapleton, of being subject to fits of insanity. I repeat to you what he told me of yesterday's conversation.
Please, Sir Henry, why won't you listen to one who means you well and leave this place?
I will, if you come with me. We can be married anywhere, you say.
Oh,
and
heaven save us both. I have no defense against your stupidity.
Well, this kind of behavior must come to a stop, sir. How dare you offer attentions to a lady which are obviously distasteful to her?
Now, hold on a second, Stapleton. I'm not ashamed of how I feel about your sister. I was hoping she might honor me by becoming my wife. And if you can find anything dishonorable in that, then you can go to the devil.
Oh, my sentiments exactly, sir. Come, Beryl. We're going home.
You can imagine that Stapleton's conduct left both Sir Henry and I completely bewildered. And another thing. I'm sure there is another man on the moor. I swear I caught a glimpse of him when Sir Henry and I were out there searching for Selden, the convict.
I ask you, Sir Henry, not to report what I told you to the police.
The man is a public danger.
My husband and I have made arrangements for him to go to South America. If you don't inform the police, he can lie safely on the moor until the ship sails. That is, if he can stay out of the way of the other man who hides on the moor.
What other man? Whom are you talking about?
Gently, Watson.
I only know what my brother told me. There's another man in hiding out there. My brother says he seems to be playing some game of his own.
Did he say where he saw this man?
Around the old stone huts where the old folk used to live. About my brother, Sir Henry, are you going to inform the police?
What do you say, Watson?
Well, if he were safely out of the country, it would relieve the taxpayers of a burden.
Oh, Lord bless you, sir. Oh, thank you, sir. I swear he'll go and you will never hear from him again.
And Holmes, no sooner had we gotten done with Mrs. Harrison than Stapleton was upon us with an explanation of his strange behavior of the other day.
I would ask you to let bygones be bygones and understand my sister is everything in my life. We've always been together.
Yes, but surely you must have thought that someday a beautiful woman like Beryl would naturally...
Marry? Leave me alone? Oh, of course. But when I was faced with the reality, it came as such a shock that I really wasn't responsible for what I said or did.
I understand completely.
That relieves me greatly, because in that case, I'm going to ask a favor of you.
Yes?
Give me some time to become accustomed to the situation.
Well, how do you mean?
I will withdraw all opposition if you give me 3 months before claiming her love. After that time, I shall have prepared myself for losing her. But if she's willing, she can become your wife.
I myself was determined to discover the identity of the other man hiding on the moor. And early that evening, I went to examine the abandoned stone huts where Mrs. Harrison said her brother believed the man to be lurking. I approached one of the huts, closed my hand over the butt of my revolver, and entered quickly. The place was empty, but there were distinct evidences that it was being used. As I looked around the remains of a meal, I heard a stone click. Then a figure loomed in the doorway.
Good lovely evening, my dear Watson. I really think you'd be more comfortable outside than in.
Holmes! I was never happier to see anyone in my life.
Or more astonished, eh? Please be careful with that revolver.
I thought you were busy working in London.
That was what I wished you to think. By keeping you in the dark, I've been able to pursue my inquiries freely. And I've uncovered some information which will lead us to the villain.
And all my reports have been wasted.
Not at all, not at all. I have them with me, and they helped me immeasurably. For instance, they've led me to the vital bit of information. The vital bit of information, my friend. The lady passing as Jack Stapleton's sister is really his wife.
Good heavens, Holmes. Are you sure?
Thanks to you, Watson. In all the pack of lies that Stapleton told you, he dropped one grain of truth. He was once a schoolmaster in the north of England. A check of scholastic agencies turned up the evidence I just passed on to you.
But why? Why this deception?
Because he foresaw that she would be much more useful to him in her character as a free woman.
But what does it all mean, Holmes? What is Stapleton after?
It's murder, Watson. Refined, cold-blooded, deliberate murder. But my nets are closing in on him, even as his are closing on Sir Henry. Another day or two at the joust, and we'll have him.
Good Lord, Holmes! The hounds!
Which way did it come from?
There, near the black door.
Come, Watson! You must not be too late. Not now. Faster, Watson. Faster. He's beaten us, Watson. We're too late. Fool that I was to hold my hand. And you, Watson, see what comes of abandoning your charge. Come on. Up there. Up there against the slope. Come on.
Wait. It's Sir Henry. I recognize the tweed jacket.
No. No, Watson, no. Oh, the man has a beard. It's not Sir Henry. It's Selden. It's Selden the convict, wearing Sir Henry's clothes, no doubt furnished him by his sister.
Dr. Watson. Well, if you're the last man I should have expected to see on the moor at this time of night. What's this? Somebody hurt? Don't tell me it's Sir Henry.
It's Selden, the escaped convict who appears to have fallen and broken his neck. What brings you onto the moor at this hour, sir?
I heard a cry. You heard it too, I expect.
Yes.
You hear anything else beside a cry?
No.
Well, that's very comforting coming from Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Well, you seem to be very quick at identification, Mr. Stapleton.
Well, you also, Mr. Holmes. Now that you're on the scene, perhaps you've made some discoveries.
No, only that this tragedy will make an unpleasant memory for me to take back to London tomorrow night.
You'll return tomorrow?
That's my intention.
Does that mean you already have a solution to the strange events which have been troubling all of us here on the moor?
No. Any investigator needs facts, not legends or rumors. No, on the whole, this has not been a satisfactory case.
I couldn't believe that Holmes meant to leave the scene, and when I questioned him, he quickly set my mind at rest. He was laying a trap for the cunning Stapleton, and he needed also to have Sir Henry believe he wouldn't be on the scene. The following morning at breakfast...
Ah, good morning, gentlemen. I see you've already helped yourselves from the sideboard.
I'm afraid I've made some rather heavy inroads on the bacon. It's exactly the way I like it. Tell me, tonight you dine with our friends, the Stapletons.
Yes, I hope you and Watson will join me. I'm sure you'll be welcome.
I'm sorry, but Watson and I must go to London.
London?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I hope you and Watson are going to see me through this business.
My dear fellow, what I'm going to say next will try your trust in me even more sorely. But I beg of you to do as I ask.
What's that?
After you dine, walk back to the hall across the moor.
What?
Hmm?
Isn't that the very thing you told me never to do?
I'm asking you to believe me when I say you'll be perfectly safe. But it's essential that you do it.
Of course, Holmes and I would be hiding along his path to Baskerville Hall, but we did not tell him that.
Careful, Watson. Ooh, look over to Grimpen Mire. Isn't that fog hanging over there?
It is indeed, Holmes.
Damnation. And it's moving toward us. Our success and even Sir Henry's life hang on his coming out before the fog is over the path. Oh, thank heaven. He's coming now. Whistling in the dark. And I can't say I blame him.
Help!
Oh! Get after him, Watson. Get your revolver.
Oh, good Lord, Holmes. What is it? A creature from
shoot
hell!
Watson, shoot!
The creature that lay lifeless on the path as Holmes and I stood over it was part bloodhound, part mastiff, and large as a small lioness. Even in the stillness of death, the huge jaws seemed to be dripping with a bluish flame, and the eyes ringed with fire. A white-faced Sir Henry staggered back to us.
What in heaven's name is that creature?
It's a family ghost, and it's dead, whatever it is.
But the fire...
Phosphorus, look. Now my fingers seem on fire.
Holmes, it's a cunning preparation because it has no odor. Thus, it didn't interfere with the brute's power of scent.
And now we must bring the man behind the brute to book. He's undoubtedly been warned by the shots that the game is up. And he's headed back to Merripit House and his wife.
Wife? You mean his sister. And surely it isn't Stapleton, but...
Sir Henry, I meant what I said. Beryl Stapleton is his wife. And his name isn't Stapleton. Since he's your younger cousin... The black sheep who didn't die in Central America, as we've been told.
What? I can't believe it. It can't be.
Ah. The door's open. I'll wait till the bird is flown, but let's go in and see.
There you are, Holmes. The villain's tied and gagged her. One moment, Beryl. Easy does it. Yeah.
I tried to warn you. You see what he did to me.
There'll be time for explanations later, madame. But where is he?
Where is he? Burning in hell, I hope. Dying slowly in the quicksand of the mire.
He knows a path. He told me so.
The path, yes. The path to his safe place in the center where he kept the great hound. I helped place the guiding wands. But yesterday, I changed them. I changed them. And in tonight's fog, he'll not notice.
Stapleton's body was never found. Some days later, when Holmes and I were back in the Baker Street flat, I asked, there's one thing that still puzzles me. That business about the boots. What did Stapleton want with two different boots?
Oh, the first boot he stole was brand new, and therefore useless to him because he needed the boot that Sir Henry sent. For the hound.
Amazing, Holmes.
Elementary, my dear Watson.
Sorry, folks, kind of messed up with the timing today. The show is ending quickly. I hope you enjoyed CBS Radio Mystery Theater. See us Friday at 8:30 Eastern with stories about dolls. Say goodnight, Dave.
Night, Dave.
We'll see you next week, gang. Bye-bye.
And was laughed at by the world for relaying a message from Houdini's dead mother to Houdini. Only the message was in English, a language Houdini's mother never knew. I'll be back shortly.
Apparently, Dave, I followed up and only scheduled an
hour. I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
I didn't catch that either. I'm looking at the counter, and then all of a sudden I hear a 90-second warning with about 2 minutes left to the radio show, and I'm like, ah, no. So I got right to the end of the story and cut it off.
Yeah, the story completed. We got that completed. That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah,
now, I waited
for the very end of her of them saying that and just bailed because it had to have some kind of a logical ending. No Red Skelton.
No Red Skelton. Well, you could always put it in here, in the after party here, to go out on.
I wouldn't mind it. I bet you the folks in the archives listening in the archives wouldn't mind either.
No. And we'll have other dog shows come up, so I'll have more dog fact, Dave facts for next time. But we still have Red Skelton coming up to help round out our show, as we had promised on the different various sites that we've had it. So why not share that with him right here in the afterbirth?
Why not? This one's got an interesting title, Dave.
Yeah, you're looking at it. I'm not. I see part one of one.
A boy and his dog with Red Skelton.
Ah, okay.
Let's check that out and find out what the hell it is.
Our final chapter is entitled A Boy and His Dog, starring Junior, the Mean Witter Kid.
Junior, where are you?
I'm upstairs, Mommy.
Where? Oh, I'm glad there's only one of you. Go outside and play with your tricycle.
No, okay. I like to ride like a cowboy. Look at me go, whee! I am a daredevil boy. Right faster, faster, right through that mud puddle. Here I go, whee! Boop! Who put that rock in there? Hey, look across the street there. Look at that, the little puppy dog. Here, come with a dog. Boy, you're so cute. Where'd you get that short tail? Looks like somebody give you a GI tail haircut. Aren't you nice? I always wanted a little dog like you. But Pop would never let me have one. He was afraid it would bark when he had him, when he sneaked in at night and wake up Mummy, you know. Uh-oh, here comes Mr. Fowler, that big tattletale.
Well, Junior, hello, hello, hello.
Oh, shut up. Hey, how'd you like me dog?
Well, I didn't know you had a dog.
Neither does me Mummy.
Oh, Junior, did you know that that little dog has no license?
What's that mean?
Well, the dog catcher picks up little pups without licenses.
Well, then I will buy him a license.
Well, they cost $2.
Then you will buy him a license.
But why should I pay the $2? He's not my animal.
Well, I tell you what, I'll sell him to you for $2 and then steal him back.
That's silly. You'll have the money for the dog tag, but you won't have your dog.
I'll get your dog back. Don't worry. I can whistle, you know. I can whistle.
Why, that'd be cheating. You wouldn't do a thing like that, would you?
He talked like a new man around here. Uh-oh, here comes Fatso O'Connor. Mount Whitney on late. Hi, Fatso.
Well, Junior, where did you get the dog?
My mommy gave him to me. Of course, he don't know about it yet. Now, be careful. He might bite you. He ain't seen that much meat in a long time.
Well, I think we should report this hound to the city pound. Yes, it may be mad for all we know.
Well, the way you're talking about him, he ought to be mad.
All right, Junior, you know it's dangerous to pick up stray dogs.
Yes, Junior, I think it's our duty to report this dog to the pound.
I agree, Fowler. Yeah.
Oh, no, now don't you try to cat my old puppy. Take me alone, now you let him alone. He's never had a puppy before.
Rod.
And a doggy is
the
man
by
square.
We'll go to my house and make the call.
All right. Mommy, hey, Mommy. Come on, puppy, let's go see Mommy. Come on, boy. Come on. Hey, Mommy. But he's not in the kitchen. What do you want? Oh, he's a pointer. Look, he's a setter and a pointer. He's sitting and pointing to the icebox. Look at you tail wagging. It's wagging so much it's wagging the dog. You hungry? Okay, I'll fix that, boy. Now, which would you rather have, a nice big steak, roast, pot roast, or some ice cream? Hmm? Oh, you want a little everything, huh? Well, here you are. Yeah, I better put this butter on it. You go with it. There. Well, look how that food disappeared. Boy, he put it away fast, didn't he?
Junior, dear. Junior, what on earth?
Look, we had a little visitor.
Oh, good heavens. Oh, my meat. That's the first steak I've been able to buy in a month. Oh, Junior, where did that dog come from?
Where did he come from? I don't know, but he sure was hungry.
Well, get him out of here at once.
Uh-oh, that's a dog catcher that Fat Joe and Mr. Fowler sent for. Now, I know he wouldn't do that because he writes nice books about Jimmy Duran and people like that. Now, why did Jimmy Fowler
do
give
that? This dog to him before he starts eating the plates. Go after the dog, Junior.
I'm not going to go at the dog catcher.
Junior, do you want a whipping?
Well, if you put it that way, I'll go answer the door.
Well, welcome to Hobby Lobby.
I'm from the city town, and I was told that you had a stray dog here.
What's a dog?
You don't have a dog?
We hate dogs. We can't stand them. The place you're looking for is about 20 miles away. Goodbye.
Oh, you don't have a dog, eh? Yeah. What was that bucket?
A very bad cold I got. I got brown kittens. Yeah, it's me poppies in the doghouse.
Junior, what is it? Oh, hello.
Hello. I came to pick up a stray dog.
No, Mommy, don't let him take him, please.
You do have a stray dog here, don't you?
Well, yes, we do. It's that little dog over there.
Don't point at me. It's me.
May I take the dog now?
Well, if you take that dog, you will have to take me, too.
Junior, stop hugging that dog around the neck. You want him to bite you and get hydrophobia?
Don't let him take him. Please don't let him take him. Please, don't let him take him.
Oh, all right, wait a minute. Here's $2. We'll keep him.
Oh, fine. Here's the dog tag. Yeah, thank you, ma'am. Good day.
Good day. Well, Junior, are you satisfied?
You know, Mommy, you are the most beautiful woman I ever saw.
Well, I just couldn't stand to see that little dog go to the pound. He jumped up in my arms and started wagging his tail and licking my face.
It does look cleaner.
Now go outside and play and see if you can behave.
Okay, come on, puppy. Come on, boy. Oh, look, there was a dog run. Hey, get out of me, Mummy's flower bed, will you, puppy? See, here, stop. Don't dig in those roses. Look at him fly. Look at him go. There, get out of there.
Junior, what's all the roses about? Look at my flower bed.
Ain't it a mess?
Junior, come here.
I didn't do it. It was the puppy.
Well, I can't stand the dog. That would be cruelty to animals.
Well, why don't they pass a law about cruelty to kids?
Now, you wanted the puppy, so you'll have to pay for his crime.
Oh, no. Okay. No matter who deserves his pay, I always wind up with it in the end.
Speed went a little crazy at the end there, but
yeah, it wasn't the best recording, but it was a fun skit. None the same. It was a good old. I think my favorite character of Red Skelton's was Junior the Mean Whittle Kid. It was just so fun. Somebody that young and articulate and devious all at the same time.
And that gives you some insight to that character too, because he is a mean widow kid, but he has a heart because he couldn't see anything bad happen to the dog.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know. He was very mischievous. I don't know I'd call him really bad. Okay, yeah, so he did plan some things to happen sometimes. He was not a good boy, but he wasn't a bad boy.
He's a little schemer.
Yeah, he is, isn't he?
But I don't think he ended up making license plates.
No. He grew out of that, yeah.
Yeah. One of those things. We got that in there. I hope we didn't tick off our listeners with that quick, abrupt ending. That was kind of unfortunate, but.
I'm sorry I didn't catch that.
I'm sorry I didn't catch it either.
We did get the whole Hound of the Baskervilles. It wasn't a bad adaption. It really wasn't.
No. And like you said, it was a good story. It was very infectious, Dave. I wasn't trying to dislike it or trying to like it, and I just let it go and listened to it. And I thought the characterizations were good.
Watson was not the Bryce without being stupid. You know, he did not realize that was Holmes out there and such, and yet he wasn't stupid
about it. Yeah, he wasn't
like
a total bumbling oaf, but...
Right.
Yeah.
You know, what bothered me sometimes about the movies with Basil was the fact that, sometimes Watson was an idiot, and sometimes when when Lestrade was there, he wasn't. Sometimes Lestrade was a complete idiot, and other times he knew exactly what was going on. You know, it was just they had a hard time creating the characters that would stay consistent around Holmes at times. The only ones that were Moriarty, who was played by several different people. I think he only appeared in about, actually, what, four or five of the stories, but he's forever linked with Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, that's his archenemy there. It was postulated to me that, so, I don't know if you want to call it a conspiracy theory or whatever, but some felt that Moriarty was merely a creation in Holmes' own mind because no one could match him, and he kind of created his own archenemy just to have a challenge. Have you ever heard that?
I think I may have heard that. I kind of brushed it off. You could have somebody, you know, because his own brother supposedly had a far more organized mind than what he even had. He was just, Mycroft was basically a lazy guy. He didn't like to go places and do things, and he had a special job within the government to make sure everything ran as smooth as it could, and didn't particularly like traveling or moving or going about. He went from his office to his home to the club that is where he was, and he was smarter than Sherlock Holmes as well. And having somebody that could be a quicker mind than Holmes, it's very possible. I mean, in the stories, he did eventually defeat him at Reichenbach. He went into hiding not because Moriarty was not dead, but the fact that his henchmen were still looking for him, and they would kill him if they got him until, quote-unquote, until the ring had been finally busted up. So that's kind of how I answer in a very long way your very short question.
Hey, that's fine. But lots of fun next week. Getting in your head, getting inside your skull, really.
Yeah. We got all kinds of things. We even added another one from what the original schedule had. So we've got all kinds of fun with moving up. Let's see. We have Inner Sanctum, which was all actually saved by your Mystery Playhouse. Your Armed Forces Radio saved that Inner Sanctum. And we have another tale from the shadow. And Dale, I'll tell you something different about this particular one. We'll get into it next week. This is one of the Australian episodes of The Shadow. We will talk about that more. And although these are all supposedly American scripts, and there aren't a lot of the Australian shadows that seem to have survived, I found one that I never heard over here. It was absolutely amazing. I can't wait to pair that up with another one. Also, we have another Blackstone Magic Detective, a mystery theater from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, as well as a Mr. Keen Tracer of Lost Persons. So,
yeah,
we have a lot of radio next week.
We do. That's five new shows. And Mr. Keen, we haven't had in a long time. I remember, gosh, Dave, it's been like over a year when you brought to the channel here, and this is the first time since then that he's been back.
Right, and I think that was the Shrieking Prisoner murder case, the five-parter, which I don't know that I found that anywhere else on the intranet. I've looked through a lot of Mr. King things, and I can't find any of the five-parters, and yet we had it right here on Erie House Radio. So go back to Erie House Radio Archives, listen to that. It's a pretty neat story. It is always better when you have more time to tell a story than, you know, essentially 25 minutes. You do that in 5-15-minute parts. Yeah, there's a little bit of recap. So, but you're talking at least a 40-45 minutes compared to, at best, 25 minutes to tell a story. Sometimes that can drag, but I've never found that to be in any of these.
Yep. Oh, GGSI paper finally caught up to the fact that we're off the air.
I guess they got busy.
After we were off the air. Oops.
Yeah, it shows you that how much they pay attention to us.
That's right. I'm 13 minutes behind GGSI paper, but that's okay. We'll keep bringing you the rarities and the audio treats that we bring along with these old radio shows. And yeah, if you want to save those Dog Fact Dave facts, or if not, we could do them here and have a little fun.
Oh, well, you know what? Let's save them, because I think there are plenty of dog stories in there. I can think of one right off the top of my head, a Green Hornet, a soldier and his dog is one that comes right off the top of my head, at least a couple of mystery theaters, one being the lost dog. So, you know, there's plenty of dog stories out there, and this is just quickly off the top of my head that I can recall. So we'll save those for another night.
You say we'll have another hair of the dog.
Well, I hope we have more than the hair of it, but okay. But we will. We'll put on our dog show another time.
Yes. But yeah, we got skulls, we've got meteors, and I can't wait, folks, for you to hear this. Lights Out, the Meteor Man, a really good story from Lights Out. It's pretty creepy.
And a wonderful, along with that, another wonderful mystery theater along with that as well. Vanishing Point to go along with the Lights Out, so it's just fun to pair these up and throw them out to everybody to enjoy.
Yep, and then September 20th and 21st, we're going to be talking like pirates with a Eerie House Radio Drive-In, Lux Radio Theater. On Friday, we'll have Treasure Island, and Saturday, we'll have Captain Blood.
Arr, baby, two good tales there.
Arr, from the high seas.
Gotta get practiced.
And we go from the mountains to the swamp. It'll be all good.
That's right. Yep.
And sometime between then and now, Dave and I will be scheming your Halloween programming.
That's right. We got time for that, and we're as far as the programming goes, just into and I'm sure we always do a little bit of roundabouts during the Gulardi Fest time, sometimes hitting a Thursday and a Sunday. So
yep.
We may do that again this year, just to keep everybody on their toes and hopefully be there to greet everybody with Gulardi Fest for Eerie House Radio, Weirdest Really Bad Movie, and Spaceship One.
Spaceship One is flying into your galaxy near you very soon.
That's right. So much happening, so much coming on, and so much more to come. You know, that is the one thing, as opposed to hosting the movies, Dale. Even though I have a wider variety that I do, there is so much more wider variety of the old radio programs than there are the old movies available to us. So, you know, it's every once in a while with a public domain movie, you get one that's really good. Man, you can get a lot of good old radio. That's nothing lost there.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely a big bank. That's why outside of War of the Worlds, we don't intend to repeat anything for a long, long, long time. Unless you ask us. If you ask us, nice.
Yep.
We're always open to suggestions.
Because other than that, we just tell you, hey, it's there. Go in the archives and listen to it. Yes, there is. A lot. There's so much there. Matter of fact, we're heading very closely, very quickly to our 500th full, complete old radio program.
Wow.
We're quickly heading towards that, you know. We're getting there very quickly because we added another three tonight, and we're just below 480 heading into September.
Yep. I'd say sometime around 21 or early 22, we should be hitting 1,000.
Whoa.
We can do it.
Well, that made me feel old. Thank you so much.
Oh, we'll just be in our 60s. No big deal.
60 is the new 40.
Yeah, try it.
Yeah, there were still some things I could do in my 40s that I have a tougher time doing now.
The people that say that to me, 60 is the new 40, they're like in their 20s. So I'm like, yeah, look at me. Look at me. You don't look like this in only 40 years.
Yeah.
But it's a fun ride. A fun ride, nonetheless.
Yep. And, you know what, since we were off a little bit early, well, actually we're off our whole lives, but we're off a little early, so... May as well bring in Jimmy, and we'll be all ready for next week, for Friday, for another Eerie House Radio. What do you say, Dale?
Sounds good. We'll get inside your skulls next week. Until then.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and it could think it do. Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
People of Earth, attention. This is a voice speaking to you from thousands of miles beyond your planet.